So, welcome to spring. You can tell by looking outside. Lecture 19, March 22nd, 2022. Lecture notes, page 169. Yes. In a little bit, Juliana will be presenting, and because she will be the instructor and 6 feet away from you, she won't have to continue masking, but you do. So, here is Juliana to tell you a little bit about the importance of student elections and why you ought to consider voting for her today or tomorrow. Here's this, and oops, and here's this. You can put it wherever you want. I'm not doing anything because that's how I get fired.
Okay, does this work?
Everything's working, and that too. Sorry.
Hello guys, so my name is Juliana Boniuto and I'm running for Director of Marketing Communications for Undergraduate Student Government. Elections are today and tomorrow from 8 a.m. today until 5 p.m. tomorrow, so that's when the polls close. Here's just a little detail of some of my experience, some highlights. I am the Alpha Phi Vice President of Marketing currently, and if you are in the College of Business, I am your Senator and your Representative. I am the Senator for the College of Business Administration, or now the Ambassador of Crawford College of Business and Entrepreneurship. So if you would like to vote for me, here is the QR code to scan and all of my contact information, and I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my platform. So my three main points of my platform are to implement paid social media advertising during election season, homecoming concert, and flash fest to increase undergraduate student body participation. I would also like to organize email and direct message blasts to promote allocations for individual students and student organizations. If you guys don't know, there is $1,000 to $3,000 available for you specifically to go to a conference, allocated for you to go to and develop your career and your skills. All right, there we go. And then my third main point is to create a USG board code of ethics to maintain professionalism as an organization on social media platforms. So those are my three main points for my platform. If you have any further questions, you can contact me anywhere there. You can vote at Flashline or at kentstateusg.com, and you can scan that QR code. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, guys, vote early, vote often for the candidate of your choice, yes? Now we're too loud. You bet. Some days we're good, some days we're not. I think we're back where we need to be. All right. So the time has come for the Ready for Business Boot Camp, Friday, April 22nd, coming up in a month. 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Crawford College Career Services Office hosting its very first Ready for Business Bootcamp, and all students are invited. Includes interactive networking keynote session, morning of workshops featuring insider advice from business recruiters on how to succeed in your job or internship search, and finish with an etiquette luncheon. So yeah, I often tell the story, it's a true story. I was a very young professor here a long time ago. The president invited all the young faculty over to the presidential suite. We have a long formal table set out with a whole bunch of young faculty. And in the front of us is a salad. And in the middle of the salad is a flower. I'm not really sure what you do with the flower in the middle of your salad. So I look down to the left to see what others are doing. I look down to the right to see what others are doing. I see a bunch of people looking down to the left, looking down to the right. Do you put it behind your ear, set it aside, eat it? Who knows? Once you attend an etiquette lunch, they'll probably tell you. So you don't have to wonder what to do with your flour in your salad. So anyhow, if you're interested in that, learn more by registering at that QR code. Also, we have another opportunity for learning. At least 1 in 5 of our students and 1 in 4 adults in the U.S. have a disability that affects one or more major life activities. If you're interested in learning the best practice for designing accessible digital marketing, you can sign up for this course. Crucial information for creating accessible content now and in the future. A Creating Accessible Digital Marketing session is coming up earlier than the other one, this one on April 6th. Best practices for graphics, email, social media, forms, digital displays, and videos will be covered. Information is there. All sessions are free, open to students and employees. Understanding accessible marketing and having solid training in creating it is such a marketable skill right now. Students with these skills will really stand out when pursuing jobs. So if you're interested in learning more about accessible digital marketing or helping those with disabilities, that's a free class you can consider signing up for. Extra credit number 6 closes this coming Thursday. Mini test number 9 closes tonight, 9 of 13. Spring break next week, and immediately following spring break, we open our midterm 2 exam. Here it is on the calendar, showing when midterm 2 opens right after spring break, and on the 6th, and it runs for 8 days to the 13th, so you should have plenty of time to recover from spring break, catch up, and get your work done. That's usual information that we saw for exam 1, so it should be familiar to you in general. Opens Wednesday the 6th, closes the Wednesday the 13th. You know what? Make sure your planner is improved now with my new information on that last day. Last time, I wrongly said you could log in up to 5 p.m. Turns out that isn't wrong. Right. At 5 p.m., it cuts you off. At 5 p.m., it cuts you off. So log in with enough time that you're done by 5 p.m. System oddity. It's different than the way Blackboard worked. So this is worth 17% of your course grade. Covers all material from lecture 11 to lecture 20, both the lecture and textbook material. No marketing in the news, no business in the news on the midterm. 50 questions, standard time 80 minutes. Open book, open notes, no electronic stuff. I sort of forgave one or two people with excuses last time for having electronic stuff. No more excuses, no more forgiveness. Do not use electronic stuff during this test. Do not use electronic stuff during this test. My liberal spirit is gone. Don't do that. Seriously. What else can I say? You can't use any digital material during the midterm. Any questions on the midterm 2 exam? Okie doke. Enhanced learning, extra credit, and back number 6. Average scores are up there. So you've added to your final course grade so far 1.6 and 1.7%. Good job. Next one closes Thursday. Mini test 9 closes tonight. So business in the news. This was an interesting thing that came across my desk, given that we had just talked about globalization. This is a case where the real world catches up with our lecture material and conflicts a little bit. If you recall, when we talked about global marketing, we were talking about the advantages of globalization, the benefits of globalization, the World Trade Organization's goal for globalization, where all countries would trade equally, right? And then they sort of said, well, gosh, regionalism, we're realistic. Regionalism is now a thing. The war has moved that along in necessary but disappointing ways. Economic blacklist of Russia marks new blow for globalization. The U.S.-led effort to expel Russia from international commerce marks another fracture in the free trade vision that guided the global strategy of American firms for nearly 30 years. So this is the real world changing our class perspective on global marketing in real time. U.S. firms are moving quickly to decouple from Russia and will probably continue to distance themselves from China. The trading system as we've known it, with the WTO at its core. Remember, we heard from Patrick Lowe at the WTO. And with a basic set of rules that everyone traded under is coming apart, says one trade lawyer. Recall the WTO's vision for global trade, which we talked about, the concept of globalization, nations trading with fewer barriers, focusing on the industries and services that they do best, has been under pressure for years, driven by economic rivalries, factory closings in wealthy countries, and those who say open commercial borders aren't in the best national interest, especially in times of emergency. So we're moving towards regionalism, or if you will, anti-globalization. Supporters of globalization note that the benefits of free trade have been far-reaching, opening new markets for businesses. Remember we said GM sold more cars in China than they did in the U.S., and making a variety of consumer goods more affordable. That's why manufacturers continue to chase labor to cheaper and cheaper places, in part because it would make your consumer goods cheaper. Shifting more production domestically will inevitably add to the inflation that is already on the rise, because it's more expensive to pay domestic workers domestic wages, and that's going to trundle through the system, and we'll all be paying higher prices, which adds to the inflation that's already happening. So some of the costs of regionalization. And nations including the U.S. have also been raising tariffs on imports, another break on global trade. So this too will have implications for domestic companies and consumers. The world may be headed back to a system of more isolated regional trade blocks, though America will stop buying Russian oil. Somebody else is likely to buy it, somebody else in their regional block. Even the internet is becoming fragmented, a phenomenon known as splinternet, as Russia has now joined China in severing many of its internet links with the West to restrict the flow of information. So the era of free and unfettered trade with rivals may be coming to an end. All I can say is stay tuned. We'll see how it plays out, for better or worse. But it's a little bit different than what we talked about in chapter whatever 4 when we talked about global marketing. Yeah? On a less desperate note, how many of you guys know Instacart? Instacart? So, Instacart plants the carrot in logo refresh. As pickup and delivery service Instacart continues to grow, the brand is updating its look. So we're doing a change in our brand image and our positioning. Rather than focus on the orange carrot, an image that suggests groceries, the emphasis has shifted to the carrot's green stem, which now serves as an arrow. So 2012, script and detailed carrot. 2016, printed and a less detailed carrot, better as an icon. 2000, I got some mask in my mouth, 2022, Instacart printed more clearly yet, carrot is gone, although it's buried in the ground, and we see the arrow instead of the stem. Sorry, guys. So we're seeing the management of the brand, or the service, if you will, with its logo, as we saw the management of the brand and logo with Starbucks when we looked at that, right? So when Instacart debuted a decade ago, the company delivered nothing but groceries. That's no longer the case. Today, Instacart works with more than 750 retail partners to transport goods belonging to categories such as beauty, pharmacy, electronics, office supplies, and home improvement. So we're seeing marketing partnerships, we're seeing channels of distribution, and of course, company growth. The business has evolved. Now the brand needs to evolve, says Laura Jones, Instacart's head of marketing. With the refresh, Instacart plans to use its arrow icon for various purposes, such as showing items being added to an online cart or highlighting its retail partnerships. Jones explained that the idea is to shift its logo from a static image to more of a design element built for motion. So here's the arrow showing relationships with various partners, for example. As Instacart's business expands, it's also up against more competition. In recent years, speedy delivery services such as Gorillas and Gopuff have been making the idea of getting everything from fresh produce to household cleaners in mere minutes a reality. Likewise, Uber Eats also reminded viewers it delivers far more than just meals in its latest Super Bowl commercial. So we're seeing competition in the marketplace. Now, of course, Instacart and all these other guys aren't so much selling a product. Their partners are selling the product. They're selling what? A service, the delivery service. And today we're making a transition from talking about managing products into managing services, which takes us then to the next one, which is a service. Who's anybody hospitality management here today? There's one. Sometimes we have a bunch more. Maybe they're all online. So hospitality management. Checking in, why Kimpton Hotels made therapy a guest amenity. Travel bookings are almost back to normal, even as our stressful times remain anything but normal. So we see changing norms that are affecting business and marketing as people go back to travel. Room service, bars and restaurants, and access to a pool and a spa are among the normal hotel guest comforts disrupted by the pandemic that have returned. But Kimpton Hotels, the IHG-owned boutique chain, knows those perks simply won't cut it for the anguished traveler these days. So it's partnering with online mental health provider Talkspace to offer virtual counseling sessions to its visitors. So marketing partnerships, a new service being offered. If hospitality providers can provide fitness rooms for guests' physical health, why not mental health amenities as well? Given the increased numbers of bookings, Kimpton could be onto something as hospitality brands try to stand out. So how do we differentiate our service? What's going on in our environment? What's going on with our consumers? Our consumers are traveling again, but they're anxious. They have anxiety about traveling. They want to travel, but is it safe to travel? What do we do? Anxiety and depression symptoms have more than tripled since COVID-19 first appeared. The ensuing consequences are now considered unacceptable collateral damage among some members of the travel industry. So what are consumers' needs? How are they changed? What can we do about them? More than 60 Kimpton Hotel locations are handing out a total of 1,000 free video therapy sessions with Talkspace counselors. The chain is also providing a $100 discount on Talkspace plans through December of 2022 and free year-long subscriptions to more than 4,000 U.S. employees. So we're providing value not just to our customers or clients, but to our employees, because in order to deliver your service promise, who delivers it for you? Your employees. So they have to be right too. The goal isn't to market mental health to travelers, but to get both guests and employees alike as comfortable as they can be with returning to pre-pandemic activities. Some people really feel excited to travel again and be back in person again. However, for some people, the rates of anxiety have definitely increased. And while they might feel excited, they're feeling a little trepidation. How many of you guys relate to that? You understand feeling excited but still having a little trepidation? Just one, two, three people. The other people, I don't know if you're only anxious or only excited, but we won't get into that. So understanding the different segments and what you might be able to provide to them. So for Talkspace, the Kimpton Partnership advances its argument that mental health care shouldn't require visiting a particular therapist or waiting weeks or months for an appointment. It's a reminder that even as travel returns to the old normal, new norms for mental health care include help available on the near screen. So services affected by these changing norms in this new environment. All right, so services marketing from both the hotel's viewpoint and from the partnership Talkspace's mental health viewpoint. So we pick up with lecture notes, page 169, page 308 in the textbook, finishing chapter 11, managing successful product services and brands, and begin chapter 12, managing services. So last time we were still talking about, and we continue to talk about, managing the brand. And we're thinking about strategies for brand management used both by producers and middlemen. So one approach is how we think about branding, which we just were talking about, within a product mix. And one approach to managing our brand within a product mix is to create a separate name for each product. So do you know who owns, manufactures, what brand Comet and Old Spice are with? Anybody have any idea who they would be? What consumer packaged goods company it might be? Yeah, P&G, at least that's what I believe that's still true. I didn't check it before today's lecture, but last time I checked, they were both P&G. How would we know that? You can't know it per se unless you start looking or researching it. So what have they chosen to do as a strategy for managing their brands? They want the consumers to focus on the brand name and not on the company name. It's a particular approach. Or what we might choose to do is family branding. How many of you guys know Armor All products? And what does Armor All predominantly focus on? What area?
Auto care.
Auto care. So you can get the Armor All glass cleaner, the Armor All vinyl cleaner, the Armor All dashboard cleaner. But it always says, right, Armor All, whatever it is. They have a different approach. They want you to know that that brand is associated with their company. Now, they're obviously more of a niche marketer than is Procter & Gamble, right? Their focus. Firestone Tires, regardless of their particular motto, say Firestone. You can brand for market saturation, so you can have multiple brands. So here is the laundry detergent market. I think once again from Procter & Gamble. Dref, Daz, Cheer, Bold, Era, Tide, Fairy, Ariel, Gain. Whether you want a heavy-duty strengthener, whether you want something that's for sensitive skin, whether you want something for your delicates, we've got a brand for you. So we're trying to saturate the market, so whatever it is you want, we got one for you. Kellogg's. Whatever kind of cereal you want, it's likely Kellogg's has something for you. Corn flakes, berry yogurt, caramel, peanut crunch, reduced sugar cereal with fiber, raisin bran cereal, s'mores cereal, bran buds, Cinnabon, oh, that's a good one. Caramel nut cereal, honey nut cereal, and on and on and on. If you want a cereal, Kellogg's, had something for you. Branding for market saturation, okay? We might choose to co-brand, work with a partner. They have a particular audience that knows them really well, maybe is loyal to them. We have an audience that's loyal to us. What if we could grow by joining up with them? So, how many people know Betty Crocker as a cake mix, even if you never actually made one? How many people know Hershey's as a chocolate company? What about Hershey's Super Moist Milk Chocolate Betty Crocker Cake Mix? So we partner up. We have brand partnerships to appeal to both audiences, right? Now, there's some dangers of co-branding, to be honest. There are obviously some advantages, which is appealing to a wider audience, but some companies sort of do it too much. Their name gets on everything in a co-brand, and it can be overdone. Pretty soon it begins to lose its value. Also, what happens if that particular product fails? What happens if for some odd reason you have to recall that cake mix because metal filings are found in the product? Both brands can suffer image because of that failure. Accounting types? Where are my accounting types? Accountants? One accountant? What's everybody? Oh, two accounts. Do you guys talk about brand equity? Like on the valuation of the firm or whatever? Is that a topic you guys discuss in accounting? Not really. Goodwill? No? Doesn't matter. Brand equity. Brand equity is the value that a brand name adds to the basic product over and above the value the product would have without the brand name, over and above the generic product. If you really think about it, what should a generic bottle of water cost? It's water. What should we pay for it? Well, I don't know what we should pay, but I bet it's not $1.50, $1.75 a bottle. Of course we do. So what do we pay for Dasani or Aquafina? Great value. Now, admittedly, I think that's in the pack. There is 14 cents a bottle. Dasani, Aquafina, what's my quote there? $1.89 a bottle. That's brand equity. That's the added value of the brand and all the marketing and promotion and branding that goes with it over the generic product. And it adds value to the brand, it adds value to the firm as you evaluate the firm. The last time I checked, Coca-Cola's brand equity, $88 billion. over some generic cola. So it obviously, managing your brand well brings value to the firm. So brand equity provides a number of benefits. First of all, it provides a reason to buy. Why should I buy a generic cola? What is it? How's it taste? How's it made? I don't know. Ah, Coke, Pepsi, those I know. It's a barrier to competition. It's one thing to go up against a generic brand that nobody has much opinion about. It's another thing to go up against Coke or Pepsi, right? It facilitates international expansion. People know your brand when you go to go global. So you're so big domestically, say, so well known, that the rollout globally is easy. Starbucks. And it helps a product to survive in a crisis. The classic example, which you may not have heard about, is a bunch of years ago, some fool in Washington State put poison pills in jars of Tylenol. Do you remember hearing that story a long time ago? And that could have crushed the company. People were getting sick, if not dying, by using Tylenol. Youch. So what did Tylenol do? Well, first of all, they were really smart in crisis management. They pulled every product off the shelf in every state. Then they were an integral part of this new aluminum safety covering that you now see in a lot of products. So you can't just open up the product and put something in it without tearing the seal. Then they, of course, made a public statement about what happened, sympathies, and what we've done to fix the problem. I don't know if they would have succeeded if they were a small regional brand. National brand, good brand image, good equity, did right. They acted right in the crisis. And, of course, they're still around today, right? So strong brand equity helps us to survive in a crisis. That has its limits. For example, when we think Campbell's, how many of us think tomato soup? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what other product could we expand into if we're tomato soup? What about expanding into another tomato-based product? Spaghetti sauce. Have you ever heard of Campbell's spaghetti sauce? No, you haven't, because they said, we don't know if that brand name will carry over to spaghetti sauce. They did, in fact, create a spaghetti sauce, but they didn't go with the name Campbell's. They came up with the name Prego. So they decided that their brand equity in soup wasn't going to carry over really well to Italian spaghetti sauce. So you have to decide on how well it's going to work for you. In the case of having a strong brand, you may decide to trademark or license your trademark, license your brand to others. So the owner grants permission to another firm to use the brand name and its brand mark on its products. Let me see who I can pick on today. You got Kent State. You have School of Fashion. Anybody have a brand? What do you got?
Bayern Munich, which is a German soccer team.
Okay, German soccer team. So the point being, if I decided to go market a T-shirt and it said Mark's T-shirt on it, Mark's sweatshirt, Mark's jacket, meh. Who's going to rush out and buy a Mark's jacket? Not very many people. So in order to get you to buy my jacket, I got to spend buku bucks, right, to get people to... What if my jacket says
Bayern Munich?
Bayern Munich on it, what you said. And what if it says Kent State University on the sweatshirt? Or if you like School of Fashion, whoa, I want that. So it makes it easier for the manufacturer to sell the product by doing this licensing. Ralph Lauren, man, you can find his co-branding on almost anything, towels, sheets, socks. I mean, they kind of go on and on and on. So the brand owner gets the profits from the licensing. So if you're legit and you have a Kent State University T-shirt that you're, or sweatshirt you're selling, you've licensed that, you're paying them some money, giving them some profit, okay? And to the extent that you're walking down the street in New York City and someone says, hey, Kent State, how you doing? You get a little brand recognition out there, right? And the other firm has a greater probability of success. I don't have to try to get everybody to buy Mark's T-shirts or Mark's sweatshirts. They buy my Kent State sweatshirt. And it costs me less money to market the thing because I have people interested in it because of this known brand. So I lose a little profit by licensing it, but it's a lot cheaper for me than trying to market it to a group of people that don't know anything about me. Yeah? Polo Ralph Lauren entered into global license agreements with Apparel Ventures to manufacture and distribute women's and girls' swimwear. That's a late ad for me. I don't know where it takes me. Hopefully know where I regret going to. Ah, it's just their news release on them licensing their product into a global agreement with Apparel Ventures to manufacture. That's just what it says. Okay, so there's an example of them licensing into yet another area. All right. So in our next little session, we're going to see the importance of a variety of things to a new brand. This is going to be a couple of young entrepreneurs, and they're going to walk through a variety of things that these young entrepreneurs had to be successful, including something we don't talk that much about in this particular course, the packaging of a brand. The comment is often when you go to the grocery store, you have like a split second to catch someone's attention and get them to buy your product or recognize it. That packaging can be really important as a factor for a new brand, even recognizing the existing brand. So that's one of the things we're going to talk about, packaging and brand, and just the whole process of how you get a new brand up and running. So let's see how this works for us.
Two male models, Jason Osborne and Jason Wright, hope to leave the glamour of fashion.
It was fun, but it was something that I was ready to get out of.
To make their own granola. Will they become the new rock stars of the business world?
Well, we were just two guys in an apartment. My theory was, if the next guy can do it, I can do it, and I can do it better.
That I moved in, this guy was making this awesome granola that I could not get enough of. I was like, Jay, man, we got to take this to market. You got to sell this. We got to get it out there, you know. That's how the whole thing started.
It's just a compelling story. You got two former male models essentially sitting around the kitchen table, and it's the classic eureka moment. They say, hey, we've got this granola. Why don't we try selling it? And they saw that it was popular among their friends. They found out it was a healthy product. It just started to take off.
It doesn't take long before both Jasons realize they have a potential product and partnership in the making. But Wright and Osborne aren't able to stop modeling yet because they use that money to fund making their granola. They aren't turning a profit, but they know they're onto something, which needs a name.
We have probably, I would say, 20, 25 different names that we could call it. But we also picked Feed, and we thought Feed described exactly what was in the bag.
Feed is a great name. I think simplicity is really important, especially on grocery shelves. We've got thousands of products to choose from.
Our belief is that what you put into your body determines your performance. You want to put the best ingredients possible. And so that concept of feeding, really came through.
The beginnings of a new brand are born. Feed Granola gets rave reviews from family and friends from all over the city, especially at the Wilhelmina Modeling Agency.
It was better than anything that I had tasted, and I think the reaction in the agency was pretty much the same. Everybody said, wow, this is terrific stuff. I think they had started to formulate this idea based on the feedback that they had, that maybe this might be a good idea for a business.
Wright and Osborne are two models who begin making Feed Granola in their West Village walk-up. Their grassroots style of marketing is paving the way to their success. Growing their business involves several steps: writing a business plan, getting a loan, and incorporating. But the missing link in their chain of success is more sophisticated packaging. Wright and Osborne are on the cusp of launching Feed nationally. They were using coffee bags and labels from Staples, and now it's time to give their brand a stronger identity.
Customer today, you probably got not even a second to get their attention. And so you want your brand big, and you want it something that they remember. And if not, you'll just get lost in the market.
Wright and Osborne's goal is to simplify their packaging and incorporate some of their own personalities. To do that, they consult a branding and identity expert.
Both Jasons had this great idea for a product, and they were having trouble developing the brand and just actually bringing it to market. This is what Jason Osborne presented to me. And you look at this and you want to find out what's working with this and what's not working with it. One of the problems that we had was that it's hard to read. It's a little busy. As an image, you're not quite sure what that is. Like, you know, it could be a bag of corn, bag of potatoes. We're not quite sure. I mean, it's legible, which is good, but you kind of want to up the professionalism of this a little bit. So we go from here to here. Very simple packaging. We keep true to the brown, like, which is also reminiscent of the burlap sack, which is great. We stylized the word feed, added some color to it.
We were trying to mimic a feed bag, you know, a sack of grains, something that was recognizable by everyone. It was grains, it was hearty, it was organic. We knew it was for thoroughbreds. That's kind of what the concept of this package evolved from.
It very simply gets across the message of what they want to do. And it's good packaging, showcases the product really well, and has a lot of character to it.
But Osborne and Wright leave their fears behind when they're nominated for an award for Feed's packaging.
I got a call from both Jasons, and they were like, hey, we're a finalist for the best packaging. And it was really great because the packaging was it's almost like this breath of fresh air to a lot of the packaging that was going on at that time.
It gives them the exposure they hope for. A feeding frenzy ensues as foodies from all over the industry come over to get the scoop on Feed.
Whole Foods comes up to us, and they like the product. And
so they become a success based on good planning, good brand name, good packaging, and they get picked up by Whole Foods. Very cool for them. So, so a successful entrepreneurial story based on a lot of the steps and things we talked about in terms of branding. All right, so from product, we take a special type of product that's a little different than we've been thinking about, because we do use the term product broadly, and we talk about services in particular. So I think we're on page 172 of the lecture notes with any luck. So we're going to come back to the example of restaurants several times. Obviously, a restaurant has as a product the food that they serve, but there's also the ambiance, the literal service. So we talk about it being part of the service industry. And this is an example of Ruby Tuesday trying to refresh their brand image. So they plan an event, and they do a video of it. Let's see if we can get it to work for us. Actually, in Ohio.
Casual dining landscape has become overcrowded with sameness. Well, we at Ruby Tuesday won't be a part of that any longer. Ruby Tuesday, as you knew it, is no more. As a symbol of commitment to change, we're at the last of our old restaurant right here in Mount Holly, Ohio. To blow it up.
Yeah!
Ready? In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Perfectly clear or not, but they had a little problem. Ruby Tuesdays would like to formally apologize to Cheeky's Bar and Grill for blowing up the restaurant in Mount Holly, Ohio. Thankfully, no one's harmed. Some of you may have seen the incident broadcast live on the internet. With the casual dining landscape awash in a sea of sameness, we had intended to blow up our own restaurant as a symbol of our commitment to change. The sad irony, of course, is that the demolition crew mistook Cheeky's for one of our old restaurants. We can all take solace in the fact that with the sweeping changes that have taken place within our organization, it's extremely unlikely that a Ruby Tuesday's restaurant will ever be confused for any other casual dining establishment again. We hope that Cheeky's management staff and patrons will accept our sincerest apologies. Now, of course, that wasn't real. It was a made-to-go-viral video for a little publicity stunt, but it got some attention. The point, though, was that in services marketing, the casual dining segment has become a sea of sameness. The industry is no longer providing customers with the value that they want when they go out to dine. And so as with products, when providing services, the marketer has to provide value to the customer. So we're going to consider a little framework when we think about services. We're going to talk about the services marketing triangle, starting with company management. And so what we say is the company management has to understand what the consumer wants and values. I certainly hope when you think of that, you hear me say repetitively, marketing, the discovery and satisfaction of consumer needs, wants, and values at a profit through integrated effort of the firm. So we're going to start by understanding our consumers' needs, wants, and values. And we're going to use that to set the service promise, what it is we promise to do with our service, yeah? We also, though, have to figure out how we're going to get the message across. So we're going to communicate that service promise to our customers through external marketing. However, we also have to recognize that services are often, not always, delivered by people. So we have to have a good relationship and understanding of our employees because they're going to be the entity that delivers our service promise. So we use internal marketing, not the normal kind of promotion we think about, but nonetheless marketing, to be sure our employees enable the service promise. And finally then, the relationship between the employees and our customers. We have to ensure that our employees deliver the service promise that they understand because we've marketed to them through the service encounters. So this is the triangle of services that we're going to think about as we move through here. And oftentimes we're going to talk about that relationship as interactive marketing. Why talk about services specially? Well, services are a huge part of the U.S. economy in dollars and jobs. Last time I had data, 2019, gross domestic product was $21.4 trillion, and services were $16.5 trillion of the $21 trillion. About 70% of gross domestic product are from services. So we're not manufacturing as much as we used to. although that may change now that we have a change in global trade. But so around 131 million people work in services, almost 80% of those employed. So it seems like we might want to pay a little bit of special attention to services. Here's the service sector value added to the gross domestic product in 2020. So there it is broken down, miscellaneous, professional, scientific, and technical services at the top, down to waste management and remediation services at the bottom, but all have a pretty significant impact on gross domestic product. Services are a larger part of the U.S. gross domestic product than goods. They crossed over that way back before 1980 and became a bigger and bigger part of the gross domestic product over time. So what are services? Services are the intangible, meaning we can't taste, touch, feel, hear, smell. Intangible activities or benefits that an organization provides to consumers in exchange for money or something else of value. So that's how we're differentiating it from other products in that general category of products. This increase in services that we just talked about is influenced by a variety of things. First of all, organizations focus on productivity and profits. We say that customer service is one of the most vital yet overlooked paths to profitability. Your net profit will show positive results of your efforts. Increased customer service gives the consumers an increased experience, brings value, brings profitability. It's very hard across a lot of organizations to decrease costs, especially today. But you can offer better customer service to your client base that allows you to increase sales. Surveys show that for many customers, service is more important to price. I refer you to my wife, the Saks Fifth Avenue shopper, versus me, the cool shopper. For her, customer service is way more important than price. Also, it's influenced by the consumer's perceived poverty of time. Now, obviously, we all have the same amount of time we ever did, but we feel that we have less and less time in recent decades. How many of you guys know about companies like Stitch Fix that provide personal shopping? You don't have enough time to shop for your clothes. I can't get out to the store and shop for clothes and look around. How about you just provide me a service that sends me things to choose from, sends me a choice of clothes? Take out food and home delivery, ignoring the pandemic, right? Even before that, I want to have my products delivered to me. I don't have time to make a meal. I have other things I want to do with my time. Panera, to hire 10,000 people as it expands its delivery service. Grubhub, DoorDash, Uber Eats are all part of this, I'll put in quotes, newer sets of services that satisfy that need. House and lawn care. People just don't have enough time to do that. How many of you guys mowed your daddy's lawn? Holy mackerel, I'm really old. So when I mowed my daddy's lawn, it was with a push mower. Now, we didn't have a big estate, but still, pushing that mower around, thank you. Then I got a little property over in Stowe, and I'm walking around with my little push mower. Okay, I get it done. Then we move up to the bigger place in Hudson. One weekend, I didn't get around to mowing the lawn. It was longish, wet, the mower stalled. I spent like 8 hours cutting the lawn over a weekend. I said, I'm done. I threw away the lawnmower and hired the local kid to provide me with house and lawn care service. He's now driving around in a Cadillac, Espinal? In a big Cadillac, and I don't have to do my lawn anymore. He's done that service for me. I don't have the time for it. Thank you. So consumers have a perception of poverty of time. They want these services. It affects virtually all industries. For example, in terms of location, who has time to go to a bank to do their banking? Now, I suppose you could do it by phone, but where's the closest ATM to us as we stand here? About 75 feet there. Think about, and we'll talk about in a minute, what it takes to be sure that that ATM out in the elements of Northeast Ohio, the heat, the cold, the rain, all in the same day, the snow, works 24/7. Nobody wants to go out there, stick their card in there, and have it eat their card or not give them money back. So ATMs, branch outlets, branch warehouses, just-in-time delivery. Longer business hours. We used to have a situation where car dealers weren't open on the weekend. Couldn't buy a car from a car dealer on the weekend. And I asked him one time, I said, look, this is one of the biggest purchases I'm going to make. My wife and I both work. The time for us to come in is on the weekend. Why aren't you open on the weekend? Their answer at the time was, our people need time off too. Yeah, but I'm the cluster. This is when I want to buy a car with somebody else there. That's changed over time as customers have demanded that we get longer business hours. Better trained sales and service people. We want to have information about the product before we buy it. One-stop shopping. I don't want to run all around town. I want to go to my Walmart Supercenter and buy some tires, some clothes, some groceries, and some electronics. Improved customer service systems. I want to be able to get information from you in person, on the phone, online, and you better be providing it for me or I move on to someone else. More information available before the sale, during the sale, after the sale. All of these services are things that people want. All of these services add value for the consumers beyond the issue of the price and the product quality. And when you do it well, they come back. So these services are different in four key ways from goods, the other kind of product that we usually think about, physical goods. And the four I's of services are intangibility, inseparability, inconsistency, and the perishability of inventory. Let's look at those for a second. Intangibility. Services can't be seen, touched, tasted, felt. So now you have to talk to a consumer, and you have to convince them to buy this thing that they can't see, taste, feel, smell, hear, whatever. How are you going to do that? It's all intangible. Seems like that could be a little tricky. So it's harder to communicate the service features and the quality to people because they can't see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, feel it. External communications have to find a good way to make these intangibles understandable, to make them tangible for the consumer. Also, frankly, setting the price can be hard to do because the consumer doesn't understand exactly what am I getting here? What is this intangible thing you're going to give me and what's it worth? So here we are up in this side of the model of our little triangle. Company management trying to use external marketing to let the consumer know about the service promise, what it is, and why they should spend money. So one thing we try to do is think about what would resonate with this consumer. What could make this intangible more tangible? So, for example, we have the idea of insurance, a pretty intangible product that you pay monthly money out for, and what do you got? The only thing you got, I guess, is maybe a card and a piece of paper. How do you make that tangible? So when we think of Allstate, what's the quote with Allstate? What's their tagline? Nobody knows? Yeah. You're in good hands with Allstate. We're trying to build that image of where you are. Travelers, travel under the umbrella of Travelers Insurance. Prudential, solid like a rock. State Farm, I forget what their tagline is. So we're finding ways to make services more tangible, make it resonate with the consumer. And I admit that I really like...
I'm your cat. Yeah. And ever since you brought me home that day... Well, I've been plotting to destroy you, sizing you up, calculating your every move.
You think this is love?
This is a billion years of tiger DNA just ready to pounce. And if you got the wrong home insurance coverage, you could be coughing up the cash for this. So get Allstate and be better protected from mayhem, like Meow.
Are you in good hands with Allstate? Are you going to suffer the consequences of mayhem? So mayhem is a character. How many of you guys recognize mayhem? And we're trying to bring to mind what happens if you don't have good insurance. Mayhem is going to reign. So that's the idea of finding ways to make this thing tangible for the consumer. Inconsistency. It's really relatively easy to get a manufacturing line to stay in tolerance through quality control measures, right? Have we had operations management yet? They talk about quality control. So you sample, you watch what's going on. If the line, if the product moves out of tolerance, you stop the line, you adjust the machines, and off you go. Services are not like that. Why? Because they depend on the person delivering the service in most cases. So it's hard to standardize it. Wouldn't it be great if all college professors were really good? How many of you guys have had a really good college professor? How many of you guys have had a really bad college professor? Why are you looking at me when you do that? How many of you have had the same college professor be good on some days and bad on other days? It's really hard to get a service to be consistent. How many of you guys have ever gone to your regular hairstylist and not gotten the cut you expect? What do you mean you cut it fine last time? What did you do? Standardization of services is hard because it depends on the person doing the work. So we try to minimize this by employee selection, getting good hairstylists, getting good professors, by training them. As you know by now, I'm frugal, so I go to like whatever the current famous haircut is. Those are not high-end stylists, but supposedly they all go through the same training, so every time you go, you get the same haircut, in theory. We train people to the specs we want them to operate to, and then we set the service performance standards. Here's what, dear employee, what we expect you to do. Here's how we want you to interact with customers. Here's how we want you to cut hair. So we're up here in our model. We're talking about the relationship between company management and employees. We're trying to find ways to use internal marketing to enable the service promise. So internal marketing of our standards and expectations to our internal customers, our employees, is key here. As, by the way, is treating our employees right. It's really hard to have good attitudes among your service employees if you treat them badly. What do they do to your customers? They don't care about you. They don't care about the customer. That's not good. So you want them to have a positive mindset. Good pay, good working conditions, appropriate motivations and incentives, create satisfied employees, and doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that satisfied employees are more likely to deliver the service promise that you made to the customer, right? Anybody work in the service industry ever where you've gotten good training and good motivation and you want to, let me go bother some people here. I'll try to stand 6 feet away and hear what you have to say. So what service industry were you in?
I work at Starbucks.
Starbucks, okay. Do you sort of know how they want you to interact with people? Do they train you at all? Do they set standards for you at all?
Yeah.
Okay, and do they check up on you periodically?
Mystery
shoppers, right, to make sure you are delivering the promise, and then presumably they either compliment you, I hope, or say, you aren't doing what we need to do. You as well?
I work at Pacific East downtown.
At Pacific East?
It's like a sushi restaurant.
Sushi restaurant. Okay, same notion. They've trained you that you know what the promise is, and they want you to act to it. They set the standards for you. And to the extent you do it, hey, of course, the product has to be good too. Happy customers, right? All right. So satisfied employees are more likely to deliver the service promise. So here we see Marriott International. They operate over 6,500 properties in 127 countries and territories with over 20 brands globally. Imagine the difficulty they have of getting everybody on board across that many employees, but they do. So there's some of their 20 brands: Ritz-Carlton, Luxury, Bulgari, St. Regis, blah, 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 blah. And they want to make sure that their promise is delivered. Ways to reduce this inconsistency: to improve standardization, internal marketing. It helps service firms to enable that service promise. It targets the employees or the internal customers. This is a quote from the founder of Marriott, J.W. Bill Marriott. If you take care of your employees, they will take care of your customers, and your business will take care of itself. So your employees are the folks that you want to make sure are doing a good job. At Marriott, a core value is that if they take care of their associates, the associates will take care of the guests. The guests will come back again and again. Marriott employees are offered discounts, talent development, international exposure, an open door policy, cross-divisional opportunities, performance incentives, and rewards for high performance. They are consistently on the list of best companies to work for. They take it seriously. Treat your employees right. Let them know what the standards are and the service promise is. They'll deliver it to your customers. Inseparability is the fourth of these eyes of services. We have simultaneous production and consumption. What's that mean? Well, when we think about physical goods, I say, anybody going to the hardware store today? And somebody says, yeah. And I say, can you pick me up a good shovel? Could you do that, hypothetically? Could you go see what a shovel is? Could you go find a good shovel, pound on it, you know, see if it's sturdy, see the brand name? You could bring me a good shovel. What if I say, anybody going to the hairstylist today? Could you get me a good hairstyle while you're out? No, that's stupid. You got to be there for it, right? So we have this idea of the simultaneous production and consumption. So consumers are a part of the process. Consumers don't manufacture the shovel. They're not part of the process. But they are part of the process when it comes to home remodeling, when it comes to getting their hair done. So you have to manage that interaction for customer satisfaction by educating consumers about the service process and their role in it. I don't know if you can think back to when you were a little kid, but the first time you went to get your hair cut, you remember mom and dad had to train you to sit still, to behave, because you're part of the process. If you're jerking all around, your haircut is not going to look too good. Doctors have this problem all the time. Patients go to the doctor and they just want to be cured. They don't want to do anything, they just want to be fixed. Get more exercise, improve your diet, stop smoking, don't drink so much. I don't want to do any of that. Well, wait, you're part of the process. I can't fix you if you aren't going to work along with me. So external marketing can be key in this part of the process. We need to be able to educate consumers about our service features. What does it mean when you want to get your place remodeled? What does it mean when you, I don't know, want a particular hairstyle or to get healthy? Communicate any prerequisites that are necessary to the consumer so they know what their part in this service is. And then help consumers to develop the right mindset and the right expectations so they're not surprised. When they don't cooperate, things don't get done. They're not home when they're supposed to be home for the remodeling. You can't remodel. You're not helping us here. So I provide educational material, I talk at you, I give you notes, I give you a book, I give you things to review, and you don't do well. You're a part of the process. I can't make you smarter all by myself. You got to play too. Oh, I have to add that example. So you're part of the service here. So dealing with inseparability, Marriott uses external advertising to educate its guests on its hotel's various offerings and what to expect. So they do it in print. Most hotels train their people with booklets. We take ours to the ballet. So we're helping to set that promise. They use external advertising to educate its hotel's various offerings on social media. So this is them twittering, I guess, at somebody about what to expect and getting likes. They use interactive marketing to educate its associates on how to interact with the guests, from the concierge to the front desk, housekeeping and maintenance that focuses on improving the customer experience. And the end result is a very high-quality service delivery and consumer experience. So they are doing interactive marketing to educate their associates on what's going on. So another way to deal with that inseparability. Perishability, an interesting little issue comparing services to goods. You can't inventory your service. What happens if you're the Ace Hardware store and you don't sell all out of your shovels today? What can you do? Sell some shovels tomorrow. What happens if you're a hotel, a concert, a hairstylist, and you don't use all of your rooms, seats today? You can't inventory them up. They're gone. They're worthless. You've lost everything on that day, right? So you can't inventory services. So it's hard to balance capacity and demand. Also, it's pretty hard to return a service for credit or exchange, certainly harder than it is with a good. So we need to find ways to manage our demand in peak periods so we don't lose too much sales, and then find ways to use capacity in off-peak periods when nothing else is happening. So idle production capacity occurs when the service provider is available, but there's no demand. You are lucky enough to be a transportation manager for a middle-sized urban environment. And one of the things you do is run bus services. So when are the peak periods in a middle-sized urban environment for buses? After work, people want to get home. Before work, people want to get to work. So you have a rush hour, right? Morning and evening. What are you going to do with all those buses and bus seats in the middle of the day when everybody's at work? By the way, I guess it's in the old days when people actually went to work and didn't all commute, didn't all work from home. It's a theory. It's a theoretical question, okay? Buses, rush hour, rush hour. What are you going to do in the middle of the day? Those things are just sitting there. You're losing money. I mean, you still have to pay for the maintenance on the bus. You still have to pay whatever the mortgage on the bus is. What are you going to do? What could you do? I'm not hiring any of you as my transportation manager. Creative thinking. Any thinking. Create a new route. Create a route from the old senior citizen home over to the little downtown area. Run a bus there that isn't on the regular schedule, a special route. Something up to the local park, something up to the amusement park, something over to the theater that is. Okay? It's not the normal sort of thing, but you find ways to make use of that idle capacity when it's just sitting there so you can bring in revenue. Revenue management, then, is a big part of how to be successful with services. Marriott introduced revenue management to the lodging industry with an innovative one-yield revenue management system and its related processes that have resulted in a 20% lift in revenue. That's not bad. From transient business, business that comes and goes. Marriott's revenue management systems, processes, and incorporate all aspects of hotel inventory, including the rooms, which we would think about right away, the meeting spaces, which sit idle, catering opportunities. The One Yield software takes most of the guesswork out of setting room rates by providing recommendations to Marriott employees about what rates to offer at any given property on any given day, given its database of information. Very cool. Movie theaters, pricing in a pandemic, although we're moving back to normal, this was going on. Miss going to the movies? Rent your own theater. It's cheaper than you think. Even if your local movie theater is open for business, you might not want to go in, especially to see a popular show where every seat is occupied. Health experts warn that being indoors, bringing the same air as groups of people, puts you at higher risk for contracting the coronavirus, which is known to be airborne, even if everyone wears a mask. If you still want the silver screen experience, but with a smaller group that you know and trust, US movie theater groups, such US movie theaters such as AMC, Cinemark, Alamo Drafthouse, will rent you a room, one of their theaters, for a private showing. The price varies depending on which movie you select. For example, older movies, $99 for the room. New movies, between $149 and $349 plus tax for the room. There was an interesting way that they thought about how are we going to get revenue for this idle capacity during the pandemic when people weren't coming out. Give people the opportunity. Did anybody happen to do that? Rent a whole room or go to someone that did? No? So that was actually available around here as well. So we're adapting services, perishability marketing during the pandemic. So we can think about these inventory carrying costs for services. They're not the same across all services, and some services have very little physical plant. There's hardly anything there. It's almost pure service. And others are services combined with a pretty big physical plant. So for example, a hair salon. Well, you have to pay rent for the building, the room. I suppose there's electricity and heat and cooling and water. But many of the hairstylists, well, who knows how many hairstylists work in a hair salon? Who knows what I'm getting at here? Yep, I'm going to walk up here, Dave, so it's a little hard for you, okay? I'm going to run up here. So how do, see if you're where I'm at, how do many hairstylists work? Did you raise your hand? Yeah, so how do they often work?
Well, like, they'll do a consultation and ask you what you like, if you want like a trim, a big cut, if you want to do any color.
Okay.
Highlighting.
And are they paid for, are they on a salary from the salon? Does the salon typically pay them a salary?
Oh,
she's the owner. Okay, well, that's what you say is true. Not quite on. But anybody know what I'm getting at yet?
No. Like commission?
Say again.
They get paid on their own services.
So on a day when they don't have any services, the management, the owner, doesn't pay them. They get paid when they have someone sitting there getting their haircut. Some places you actually have to pay rent to have a station there, but that's a whole different thing. So my point is that there's a fairly low cost compared to other things we're going to talk about, to running a hair salon, because the people there only get paid when they're making money. You don't have to pay them otherwise. So also true of a real estate agent, okay, low cost. Moving along, we have the idea of an insurance company. A dry cleaner, we begin to have a lot more physical plant. You can see where that would be more costly. You have all the fluids. An auto repair center, okay, again, lots more stuff going on. Restaurants, you have food cost, a hotel. Must cost a lot of money to have a hotel, even if nobody's there. Amusement park, airlines, etc. So most salons have stylists on commission, so there's a low carrying cost for them. Salons buy products such as shampoo for wholesale and then double the cost to sell them to their customers. These products represent one of their inventory carrying costs, but it's not massive. A auto repair center has a lot of products they have to be paying on. If there's no cars coming in, they still have a lot of product that they have to carry in inventory. I have no idea how much it would cost to run a hotel that had no people coming in, or an amusement park with no people coming in, let alone an airline. So we can see that in terms of this, there's a variety of costs that are involved across these types of services. Just as we talked about the physical good, the product, having a core and then auxiliary features to it, we also, for services, have the core or the primary service. This is the major activity of a business or nonprofit organization. For example, an investment services firm provides the use of a brokerage account to buy and sell stocks. If you did not do that service, you aren't really that. I don't know what you are, right? Just like if your toothpaste didn't clean your teeth, you aren't really a toothpaste. So that's at the core. Anybody make use of an investment service? Anybody have their own brokerage? No? All right. So there are different types of firms out there, though, that go beyond just the core. Anybody know Charles Schwab? One person? Okay. Do you picture that as being, I don't know, more sophisticated, less sophisticated, more professional, less precision, more services, less services? How do you picture it? Sort of a top-end sort of thing, and they're going to provide you services and answers to questions that other people don't as they provide you with that investment.
And can you
service.
Explain to me why you recommend synthetic over cedar?
Superfood. Is that a real thing?
It's a great school, but is it the right one for her?
Is this really any better than the one you got last year?
If we consolidate suppliers, what's the savings there?
So should we go with the 467 horsepower?
Or is a 423 enough?
Good question.
You ask a lot of good questions.
I think we should move you into our new fund.
Sure.
Okay.
But are you asking enough about how your wealth is managed? Wealth management at Charles Schwab.
So if you're not at Charles Schwab, how are you going to get the good answers to these important questions? You ask everybody else questions about the car, whatever else it was. Ask your investment broker, your wealth manager, these important questions. Charles Schwab is going to be able to provide those answers for you. Also, they're a broker. How about E-Trade? Guys, remember the trading baby?
So, yeah, sorry about last night.
Yeah, I just don't understand why you didn't call.
Yeah, well, I was on E-Trade, you know, diversifying my portfolio, taking control like a wolf.
Right.
What's that? That's volatility in the market. Taking care of. Wolf style.
Oh, oh, oh.
And that milkaholic Lindsay wasn't over?
Lindsay?
Milk a what?
Build a diversified portfolio at E-Trade.
Do you get the sense that those two firms offer somewhat different levels of services? They're different from one another. They have different images. They offer different extra services that go with them. Right. Okay. I'm getting tired. Let's wrap it up. See you next time, Thursday. Don't forget to do the mini test tonight.